Well, we have been talking about bits of history for the last probably going on 2 months now, that looking at the foundation, the founding fathers of our nation. We're going to move a little bit further ahead in the history today to Samuel Morse. And the title is From Disappointment to Appointment. What is Samuel Morse known for? The telegraph, right? And the Morse code. But you know, if he had fulfilled his dream, he would never have invented the telegraph. It was a tremendous disappointment in his life that sent him into the study of the transmission of electricity. Samuel was the son of Jedediah Morse, who was known as the father of geography. He was a well-known person. He published the first geography book, textbook in America. So Samuel was the oldest of 11 children, 8 of whom died in infancy. Jedediah taught his son to follow Christ, and I thought this was a kind of good advice that he gave his son. He said, "Rise early in the morning, read a chapter of the Bible, and say your prayers. After a serious performance of these duties, you're to wash your head, your face, your hands, and your mouth in cold water, not hastily and slightly, but thoroughly." So first you prepare the inside, and then you prepare the outside, and then you're ready for your day. But Samuel was actually an artist. And after graduating from Yale at the age of 19, he started at age 14, he funded his education by selling paintings. And Samuel announced after he graduated his decision to be an artist, and he traveled to London and to Paris to study art. And he longed to show Americans what he was seeing over there. His most famous piece is called Gallery of the Louvre, and there it is. He included all of the paintings that happened to be in this one room in the Louvre, including, you can see down at the bottom, the Mona Lisa. And it's on the bottom row, kind of a little bit to the right. It's the second picture there. So he was quite an amazing artist. He also painted a lot of patriotic moments, and he started to be called the American Leonardo after Leonardo da Vinci, so he became pretty well known. In 1837, he applied for the appointment to fill the vast panels in the U.S. Capitol with patriotic historical paintings. And you know, everything in his life prepared him for this moment. This is what his dream was, and he thought, it will be fulfilled if I can just do that. But what happened? Congress picked somebody else. He was devastated, absolutely disappointed, to the point where he gave up painting completely. But because of that, he turned his attention to electricity and the transmission of electricity. Now, I don't know how that relates with painting. It's like, you know, really, when you talk about sides of the brain, you know, those would be kind of opposite sides of the brain. But obviously, Samuel was quite talented in both. But it wasn't his first choice. But God used him to change the world. His interest, he became interested in this earlier in life while he was still painting. It's a really sad story. In 1825, he was in Washington. He was doing the portrait of the Marquis de Lafayette. And he received news delivered by a horse messenger that his wife had died. So he immediately left for home, but arrived to find that his wife had already been buried because he lived in Connecticut at that time. This experience of missing his wife's demise and her burial and her funeral really put deep in his heart somewhere, communication has to be improved. Long distance communication has to be improved. And he didn't pursue it because art at that time was his major passion. But later on, May 24th, this is a day in history, in 1844, he unveiled his invention. He sent a message from Washington to Baltimore. Now, that's not real far, as the crow flies. The message that sent, he thought about this, what should I send for the first message? It was from Numbers 23:23, and it was, what hath God wrought? Now, in normal English, it's like, look what God has done. And basically, he chose that message because his quote was, it baptized the American telegraph with the name of its author. In other words, he gave God all the credit for giving him the ability for this invention. But the point of this story is that life will bring us disappointments. And what we do at those times will determine what our future will be. The Bible is filled with men and women who suffered great disappointments, but saw that disappointment turn into an appointment for the Lord. And I think we can learn some lessons here from those people who were disappointed, but God turned things around. And what I want to encourage you with this morning, if you're at a place of disappointment now, don't give up. God can still turn things around. We're going to look at a few examples here. The first one is Moses. Moses, we know, what was his call? What was his call from God? What was he supposed to do? Deliver the people from the Egyptian slavery. And Moses knew this. He knew that's what God wanted him to do. The Bible tells us in Hebrews that he rejected becoming, even though he had at his access all the wisdom of the known world at that time, he stayed faithful to the Lord. But sometimes we can get ahead of God, and that's what Moses did. Exodus 2, verses 11 and 12 tell us about it. Many years later, now when Moses had grown up, he went out to visit his own people, the Hebrews, and he saw how hard they were forced to work. During his visit, he saw an Egyptian beating one of his fellow Hebrews. After looking in all directions to make sure no one was watching, Moses killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. Now, he felt like he was fulfilling his call from God. He delivered that one man from a horrible situation. But that's not what God had in mind. And as we follow the story in Exodus 2, 13 to 15, it says, the very next day, Moses went out to visit his people again. He saw two Hebrew men fighting. Why are you beating up your friend? Moses said to the one who had started the fight. The man replied, who appointed you to be our prince and judge? Are you going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? Oops. Then Moses was afraid, thinking, everybody knows what I did. And sure enough, Pharaoh heard what had happened, and he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in the land of Midian. Moses was shocked by this response and disappointed that the people didn't recognize his call. They didn't respond to him. You know, the guy said, who are you, our prince and judge? And he said, yeah, God made me that. But you see, God hadn't made him that yet. He went ahead of God, and sometimes that leads to disappointment. What did he do? He ran. But we know that. How many years later? 40 years later. So 40 years he's running from God. That's a long time, but you know, God doesn't forget. There is this false teaching that I have heard, maybe you have too, that if I say no to God, he'll just pick somebody else. Well, ask Moses about that. 40 years later, God still remembered. Ask Jonah about that. If God has a call on your life, he's not going to forget it. And he's going to work circumstances so you don't forget it either. It's a hard thing to fight God. Moses' disappointment turned into an appointment with a burning bush in the wilderness. Let's look at Exodus 2, 23 to 25. Years passed and the king of Egypt died, but the Israelites continued to groan under their burden of slavery. They cried out for help, and their cry rose up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He looked down on the people of Israel and knew it was time to act. We know the story. Moses was reluctant at this point. It was just like, no, I messed up. It's over. Don't talk to me. God dealt with every one of his questions, if you remember. What was the only thing that made God mad? When he said, pick somebody else. God was very angry about that because he had chosen Moses. You know, God has chosen each one of us for something special. And really, our life goal is to find out what that is and walk it out. It doesn't mean that when God chooses you for something, the fulfillment is going to be easy. Moses didn't have it easy even when he went back to Pharaoh. We know that. And the people turned against him, and, you know, because their life became worse before it became better. But from Moses, we can learn we have to wait for God's time and an appointment. Proverbs 19:21 says, many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. We have to make sure that our ideas are his ideas and his time. It's hard to wait. How many of you like waiting? You know, you go to the doctor or something, you know, you always have to be 15 minutes early, but they can be 15 minutes late, you know. It's not an easy thing to wait. Or even at the grocery store, I don't know about you, but I always pick the wrong line. It looks like it's going to be the short line, but never is. There's always somebody who has an issue or a problem, and then you wait. And why that is so frustrating, I don't know. I don't like waiting. But there are times God wants to teach us things. He says, patience. What does he say about patience? Yes, let patience have its perfect work. I hear people say, oh, don't pray for patience. It's like, yes, pray for patience. Because it says, once you become patient in waiting for the Lord, you will be what? Wanting nothing. You will be, the word used in the Bible is perfect, but it doesn't mean morally perfect. It means complete. Because patience is not an easy thing. But we need to let the Lord work that in our lives. That's the story of Moses. I want you to grab a Bible this morning. I am using the NLT this morning. And if you're using one of the chair Bibles, it's the reddish color one. And you don't hear too many messages about this person that we're going to talk about. Genesis 16. Hagar. So grab a Bible, Genesis chapter 16. Here's a woman who had expectations that were turned to disappointment. But God turned it to an appointment. Now we think negative things most of the time. Hagar and Ishmael are looked at in a very negative way. But I think we need to really look at what the Bible says about them. So starting in Genesis chapter 16, I'm going to read verses 1 to 3. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him, but she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, The Lord has prevented me from having children. Go and sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have children through her. And Abram agreed with Sarah's proposal. So Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian servant, and gave her to Abram as a wife. This happened 10 years after Abram had settled in the land of Canaan. Now think about this. She's a slave. She's a foreigner already. And now she's to be given to her master as a wife. What is her expectation? Elevated in the view of everything. Now, we are appalled by something like this. But unfortunately, Abram and Sarai, as they were called back then, did what was customary. It was a customary thing that if a couple were childless, that they would have children through a servant. Think about Jacob. He did it. You know, the 12 tribes of Israel. Let me do a little bit of math in my head. Six, four of them came from slave women, the handmaidens of his two wives. Here, Hagar thinks, this is a good thing. My life is going to improve. Let's read on, verses 4 to 6. So Abram had sexual relations with Hagar, and she became pregnant. But when Hagar knew she was pregnant, she began to treat her mistress Sarai with contempt. Now she thought she was better than the first wife. Then Sarai said to Abraham, "This is all your fault." Just wait there for a moment. Whose idea was that? Okay, let's just go back. "I put my servant into your arms, but now she's pregnant. She treats me with contempt. The Lord will show who's wrong, you or me." Abram replied, "Look, she's your servant, so deal with her as you see fit." Then Sarai treated Hagar so harshly that finally she ran away. Now, it's kind of interesting at this point. God could have, she just ran into the wilderness. God could have just left her to die. Right? Ishmael would never have been born. But that didn't happen. Verse 7. "The angel of the Lord found Hagar beside a spring of water in the wilderness along the road to Shur. The angel said to her, 'Hagar, Sarai's servant, where have you come from and where are you going?' 'I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai,' she replied. The angel of the Lord said to her, 'Return to your mistress and submit to her authority.' Then he added, 'I will give you more descendants than you can count.' And the angel also said, 'You are now pregnant and will give birth to a son. You are to name him Ishmael,' which means 'God hears,' 'for the Lord has heard your cry of distress.'" That's kind of amazing. God named Ishmael. God had a plan for Ishmael. We look at Ishmael sometimes as a big mistake. God could have, you know, was it the right thing for Sarah to give her husband the slave girl? No. Yet God used that. He didn't let that young woman, I assume she's younger than Sarai, didn't let her die. And he named the baby. Let's look at verses 13 and 14. "Therefore, Hagar used another name to refer to the Lord who had spoken to her. She said, 'You are the God who sees me.' She also said, 'Have I truly seen the one who sees me?' So that the well was named Beer Lahai Roy, which means 'Well of the Living One Who Sees Me.' It can still be found between Kadesh and Bered." Probably not anymore, but probably at the time of the writing. Who knows? It might be there. When we suffer disappointments, we need to know that there's a God who sees and that there's a God who hears. I want to jump over to Genesis 21. So turn over a few pages because God met her again. This time, this is after Sarah has had her son. And it's clear Isaac is the chosen one, even though Ishmael is older. Let's look at chapter 21 and start at verse 8. When Isaac grew up and was about to be weaned, Abraham prepared a huge feast to celebrate the occasion. But Sarah saw Ishmael, the son of Abraham, and her Egyptian servant Hagar making fun of her son Isaac. So she turned to Abraham and demanded, "Get rid of that slave woman and her son. He is not going to share the inheritance with my son Isaac. I won't have it." This upset Abraham very much because Ishmael was a son. Abraham loved him. But God told Abraham, "Do not be upset over the boy and your servant. Do whatever Sarah tells you, for Isaac is the son through whom your descendants will be counted. But I will also make a nation of the descendants of Hagar's son because he's your son too." So Abraham got up early the next morning and prepared food in a container of water, strapped them to Hagar's shoulders. Then he sent her away with her son, and she wandered aimlessly in the wilderness of Beersheba. Now, I got a problem with Abraham here. He was really rich at this point, and yet all he sent them away with was the food and water she could carry on her back. Yes, sending them away was the right way, but he didn't do it the right way. He could have sent other servants with her. He could have sent provisions. He could have sent directions, somebody to help her get to a place of safety. I think Abraham, he was so upset, probably he just kind of messed up. And it seems to me he's a little bit afraid of Sarah. That can happen. Let's read on, starting at verse 15. When the water was gone, she put the boy in the shade of a bush. He was probably about 12. I mean, he wasn't a little tiny boy, a baby at this point. Then she went and sat down by herself about 100 yards away. "I don't want to watch the boy die," she said, and she burst into tears. But God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven, "Hagar, what's wrong? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy's crying as he lies there. Go to him and comfort him, for I will make a great nation from his descendants." That's kind of amazing. Again, the Lord could have just let him die. But he had a plan. He had a plan for them as well. Verse 19, then God opened Hagar's eyes and she saw a well full of water. She didn't see it before. She quickly filled her water container and gave the boy a drink. It says, and God was with the boy. As he grew in the wilderness, he became a skillful archer, and he settled in the wilderness of Paran. His mother arranged for him to marry a woman from the land of Egypt. Again, it seemed like disappointment, disaster had come upon Hagar. But God turned that disappointment and that hardship into something good and a promise from God. And God kept that promise. If you read on further in Genesis 25, you don't have to go there necessarily. It talks about the sons of Ishmael, and there were 12 princes that came from Ishmael. So he was blessed. He was blessed by God. What we can learn from this is God sees when we're feeling overlooked or rejected or pushed away. And he can meet us in those lonely places. He can meet us in those times of confusion. And we have to know for sure that God has the answer. God has the answer for every hardship, for every confused place we are in our lives. I just want to add a little footnote here about Ishmael. Some people today say that modern Arabs are the descendants of Ishmael. You may have heard that, but that is absolutely not accurate. There were Arab tribes mentioned in the Bible before Ishmael was ever born. Now, Ishmael's descendants did intermarry with Arab people. So maybe a tiny fraction in the Arab gene pool could come from Ishmael. But people like to say, oh yeah, well, the fight today is still going on between Isaac and Ishmael. And that's not really true. That just a little footnote for that. Maybe you've heard that. The Muslims especially like to claim that, because they claim Abraham as their father. And also they say, go so far as to say that Abraham really didn't sacrifice Isaac on Mount Moriah, that it was Ishmael. So like there's a whole lot of switching that goes on. We need to follow what the word says and not be led astray by other little things. So that's my little bunny trail. There's a person that I wasn't going to include in this, but actually I'll tell you, perfectly honest, when Nancy and I were praying last night and I mentioned to her what the message was, she mentioned a woman to me. And I was not able to get this woman out of my mind, so, because she's an amazing example of God turning disappointment to an appointment from him. And that is Leah. You can see her story in Genesis 29 and 30, and you can read that on your own. We'll just summarize it. If you remember, there were two sisters. And if you remember the story, Jacob ran away because his brother was going to kill him. That's a whole other story. And so he ran away to a relative, his uncle. And he fell in love with a younger daughter, Rachel. But his uncle tricked him. And I think, how could that have happened? But when you realize it, it wasn't like there was a, you know, I have a great niece who's getting married the end of the week, and all these preparations and all these whatevers, they didn't do all that. Basically, it says in going back to when Isaac had his wife and met his wife, and his wife was brought to him, they just went into the tent and were married. That was it. So it would be easy. I mean, it's dark. She probably had a veil on and went into the dark tent. And in the morning, he realizes he's just married Leah. He didn't really care for Leah. So from day one, she knows her husband really doesn't love her. You know, she just got pushed into this situation. And there's competition between her and her sister all through this, because eventually, really, not that far, after a week, he said, okay, Laban says, okay, just, you know, complete the week sleeping with this one, and after that time, if you promise to serve me for 7 more years, I'll give you the other one too. Now, he didn't have to wait 7 more years. After that week, he married Rachel as well. So can you imagine Leah? The rejection, the disappointment that happened, but God saw her. God saw her. You know, the Bible uses a term that to describe her that's really been translated incorrectly, saying that she had weak eyes. It really is means that she was tender-hearted. She was sensitive. She was caring. So God saw her. And she is the one, we're just going to bring it to a summary here. How many sons, anybody know, did Leah have of the 12 sons of Jacob?
Six.
Six. Six sons. She had Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and a little bit later, Zebulun. There were two from her maid, two from Rachel's maid, and then Rachel had Joseph and Benjamin. Now, I think Jacob really wasn't a very good judge of character. Because Rachel was kind of a snotty thing. When she couldn't get pregnant, she really hollered at her husband. Like it was his fault. It's like, hey, I've got a lot of sons by your sister. But Jacob was so enamored of Rachel. He was blind to her. And who stole the, remember what she did? She stole the family idols and sat on them. No, I can't get off my camel. You know, it would be embarrassing at this time. She was not a very nice person, really. But God saw Leah and favored her. Think about the sons she had. Levi, the priestly line, came through Leah. Judah, the kingly line, came through Leah. And who was the one is mentioned in the Bible that was buried in the cave of Machpelah alongside Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? It was Leah. So God saw her and turned her disappointment into an appointment that carried through the whole ages. We're going to talk about one more person quickly. That's David. David's probably the story people know most in the Bible from the very beginning. How much rejection did this guy face, and disappointment did he face? Can you name one? Yeah, his father-in-law gave his wife away. Gee, that was really nice. Can you think of anything else that would be a disappointment or rejection for David? Yeah, Samuel came to anoint the king, and he knew it was going to be one of Jesse's sons. And, you know, the sons all lined up except for David. He wasn't even called. Oh, he was just that shepherd boy out there. So even his family didn't think very much of him. And if you remember when the story of Goliath, when David was sent by his dad to check on his brothers, it's like, oh, you're just here. You just want to see the action. I mean, they did not like him. How else? What other instances in his life was he rejected or disappointed?
He didn't get to build the temple.
Yeah, he didn't get to build the temple. That was his heart. This man was a worshiper. God gave him the plans and said, you can't build it because you are a man of war. And it's like he was following God. But he could not build the temple. What else? A disappointment. He lost a lot of his family. You know, part of it was a consequence of his own sin. Even though the sin was forgiven, there are consequences. And one of the things God said about the kings, you know, don't gather lots of horses and don't have a lot of wives. Well, David had a lot of wives. And there was competition among his children. Probably the worst rejection and disappointment was when his son led the rebellion against him. You know, think about that, his own son. And he ran. He left Jerusalem. Even before that time, when Saul died, well, then there's Saul. He came to serve Saul, and Saul wanted to kill him. I mean, you wonder how somebody that had all this stuff happen to him could stay strong in God. The Bible tells us he encouraged himself in the Lord. That is 1 Samuel 30, verse 6. It says, David was now in great danger because all his men were very bitter about losing their sons and daughters, and they began to talk of stoning him. So his own men, this is at a time he was running from Saul, and they were attacking someone else. And meanwhile, their town, remember, got overrun, and all their wives and children were taken. And so his warriors were going to stone him. It says, but David found strength in the Lord. And the King James Bible says, David encouraged himself in his God. So Saul was after him. His family rejected him. He lost his wife. Even after Saul died, was he accepted as king of Israel? Nope, just one tribe accepted him for 7.5 years. And then the rest of Israel accepted him. He knew something about disappointment. He knew something about rejection. And if we can learn lessons from David, we can overcome any disappointment, any rejection, any confusing time by looking, first of all, knowing God sees you. God sees you when you're struggling. God sees you when you're hurt. God sees you when you've been betrayed. God sees you when life doesn't make sense. And when we learn to turn to Him, now God does provide people to help us. I'm not negating that, but He's the one who has the answers. And I want to close today by looking at parts of two Psalms written by David. First Psalm 34, so let's turn there. Psalm 34, the heading on my Bible says, regarding the time he pretended to be insane in front of Abimelech, who sent him away. There was one time when David was running from Saul, and he ran to the enemy, who was Abimelech, and realized he was not really in a good place, and so he pretended to be crazy, so they sent him away. But imagine David at this point. He's running. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He's already been anointed king. Nothing seems to be falling into place in his life. And here's what he can say. Psalm 34, we're going to read verses 1 to 10. And let these words sink into you, because there are important things for us to apply. In one of his worst times in his life, David says, I will praise the Lord at all times. Now, you would think he would say that when life was good, but he didn't. He knew that secret of praising God. I will constantly speak his praises. I will boast only in the Lord. Let all who are helpless take heart. Come, let us tell of the Lord's greatness. Let us exalt his name together. I prayed to the Lord, and he answered me. He freed me from all my fears. Fear comes upon us at times. God is the answer to that fear. Those who look to him for help will be radiant with joy. No shadow of shame will darken their faces. In my desperation, I prayed, and the Lord listened. He saved me from all my troubles. Does that mean David never had any problems again? Of course not. For the angel of the Lord is a guard. He surrounds and defends those who fear him. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Oh, the joys of those who take refuge in him. Fear the Lord, you his godly people, for those who fear him will have all they need. Even strong young lions sometimes go hungry, but those who trust in the Lord will lack no good thing. Let's jump down to verse 17. The Lord hears his people when they call to him for help. He rescues them from all their troubles. There's a key there. Do we remember? Sometimes when we're in our worst situation, we don't even remember to cry out to God. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. Has your heart ever been broken? Did God leave you? No, he came closer. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. The righteous person faces many troubles, but the Lord comes to rescue each time. And there's other beautiful things in that psalm, but what an amazing example. We can't lie and say, you know, you come to Jesus, give your life to the Lord, you'll never have a trouble again. People used to say that. And that's why people who came to the Lord for that probably walked away shortly after. I want to look at one other psalm, Psalm 37, so turn over a couple pages. Just want to read part of that and just am praying that the Lord will just have you grab one of these verses and say, yeah, I'm going to do that, or that's what I need today. Psalm 37, we're going to do 1-7. Don't worry about the wicked or envy those who do wrong, for like grass they soon fade away, like spring flowers they soon wither. You know, sometimes it looks like people who are bad have all the money. People who don't live a good life, it's like they're getting blessed. Is God blessing them? No. Don't worry about it, says. Trust in the Lord and do good. Then you will safely live safely in the land and prosper. Take delight in the Lord and he will give you your heart's desires. Now I want to put a little twist on that part. It doesn't mean that he's going to give you whatever you want. What I like to think that it means is he's going to change my heart and put his desires in my heart. Commit everything you do to the Lord. Trust him and he'll help you. He will make your innocence radiate like the dawn, and the justice of your cause will shine like the noonday sun. Be still in the presence of the Lord and wait patiently for him to act. There's that patience thing again. Don't worry about evil people who prosper or fret about their wicked schemes. Let's jump down to verse 23. The Lord directs the steps of the godly. He delights in every detail of their lives. Though they stumble, they'll never fall, for the Lord holds them by the hand. Have you ever been in a situation where you feel you've got nobody else, but the Lord is close? David says, once I was young and now I'm old. Some of the rest of us can say that. Yet I have never seen the godly abandoned or their children begging for bread. Jump over to verse 34. So put your hope in the Lord. Travel steadily along his path. He will honor you by giving you the land. You will see the wicked destroyed. And jump down to 39. The Lord rescues the godly. He is their fortress in times of trouble. The Lord helps them, rescuing them from the wicked. He saves them, and they find shelter in him. If you're going through a difficult time right now, if you've suffered disappointment, if you're hurting, if you've been betrayed, God's got the answer. Turn to the Lord and trust him to open a door for his appointment. David finally became the strongest king in Israel. And he has a promise that in eternity he's going to rule. Because he did not give up. And when he sinned, he repented. That's why God says he's a man after my own heart. Not because he was perfect, but because when he sinned, he repented. And that's an important thing. A really important thing. Because sin separates us from God. I want to close with one last verse. very familiar one, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. I don't know about you, but my understanding is very limited when it comes to God things. There are times I think God should do this and he does that. Or he doesn't do anything, or I think he's not doing anything. But it's like we sang, even when we don't see it, he's doing something. You know, we don't have to see. God is not accountable to you or me to report what he's doing. You know, we're praying for, I'm sure some of us are praying for people regularly. It's not up to God to report to us what he's doing in their lives. Right? We just have to stand in faith knowing that God is working. Verse 6 says, seek his will in all you do, and he will show you which path to take. Let's stand. Lord, I want to pray for any person right now who's feeling discouraged or disappointed. If that's you, you don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to come forward. You just have to, you know, say in your heart, God, that's me. Lord, I pray for each one. You know the situations. I don't even need to know the situations. You know every detail. And the best thing is you know the future. And you have good plans for your people. And so I pray, Lord, for any of those who are discouraged, for any of those who have been disappointed, for any of those who think that you may have left them. I pray for your encouragement. Holy Spirit, come even now and speak to each heart and to each mind. Shower each one with your love, with your encouragement. And Lord, whether it's a song we sang today or whether it's a verse we read today, I pray, Father, that you would use your word to go deep into each heart. That, Lord, when times of trouble come, we will be like David and know how to encourage ourselves in you. I pray a blessing upon each one here. In Jesus' name, amen.